Well, even though on Sunday morning we are still looking at the crucifixion, in our study through John on Sunday night, we've surpassed ourselves. We've passed the crucifixion and those seven sayings, and we're now ready to look at the resurrection in John chapter 20. There are certainly some fascinating things that we've discussed about the death and burial of Jesus Christ. But without a doubt, the resurrection is the single most important event of human history. There are several things that Christianity has that other world religions do not. Many religions have a holy book that they claim is inspired by some god or gods. Many religions have teachings involving all sorts of miraculous events. What Christianity has that is different, and of course most religions have a founder or a person who embodied the teachings of their god, but with Christianity, we have a bit of a difference. One is, we have a man who was God in the flesh, according to the teaching, which is to some degree different than most religions would have, although there would be some who would claim some form of deity was involved with the founding of their religion. But what we have with Christianity is a man who lived a perfect life. And other religions, even their founders, were not claimed to be perfect people many times. They were, maybe when they spoke or when they wrote and were inspired, that was supposedly perfect, but they themselves were not perfect people. And so we have that aspect. Of course, we have a situation where, with Christianity, we have the founder of that religion dying, which is not at all unusual. The founder of most religions in the world today died. The significance, of course, that we talked about this morning with the many prophecies that Jesus fulfilled before he said, "It is finished," how he had completed so many things and fulfilled so many of those prophecies, that other religious leaders didn't have prophecies about them foretold hundreds of years in advance. So that is somewhat unique. But the most significant thing that is different from other world religions and Christianity is that whereas all of the leaders and founders of those religious movements died just as Jesus died, and when I say just as, I don't mean in the same manner of death, but they all died. Jesus died. The difference is, all of those other religious leaders, all of those founders of all of those other religions, are still dead. And Jesus is not. His tomb was found empty. And that is significant. I dare say the most valuable empty thing that ever has existed in the history of the world is the tomb of Jesus Christ. Now some will claim to the contrary. They will try to make excuses or explanations and claim some other reason that his tomb was empty and that he didn't rise from the dead, that he was still dead and is still dead. But the fact of the matter is, at that time, no one could put forth any other explanation that had any evidence to back it up. And the evidence for his resurrection is overwhelming. Now there's a statement in reasoning. It's used many times in science, sometimes in logic. It's Occam's razor. And among other things, that one brief part of that idea is, all things being equal, the simplest explanation is usually the correct one. Now, simplest is not what we always might sometimes think of as simplest. We think about somebody rising from the dead, we think, well, that's not simple. But it is the simplest explanation for the events that took place 3 days after Jesus' death and burial. It is the simplest explanation for a stone weighing thousands of pounds being rolled away from a tomb door while it was being guarded by Roman soldiers. It's the only explanation for why a group of scared fishermen who were locked in a room because they were afraid suddenly became brave enough to face death in proclaiming Jesus as the Son of God. It's the simplest explanation for why the Pharisees and other religious leaders of the Jews, the high priest and the council, got the Roman soldiers to say that they slept when they were supposed to be guarding, and yet those soldiers did not die. A Roman soldier who fell asleep on watch, and particularly a whole company, a whole group, I say company in the sense of a group, not in the sense of the numerical division of a company itself, but a whole group of soldiers who was tasked with guarding something and then fell asleep on duty is unheard of in the ancient world of Rome. But when one would fall asleep on duty, he wasn't just demoted, he wasn't given kitchen duty or told to scrub the bathrooms with a toothbrush or some such thing like our military might do today. He wasn't even discharged with a dishonorable discharge or faced a court-martial even for that matter. He was just executed. And yet these soldiers boldly proclaimed, "We fell asleep on the job." And nothing happened to them. The simplest explanation is that at the higher up levels, the truth was known that that's not what happened. But they didn't want to talk about what had actually happened. It's an amazing thing to think about, someone rising from the dead. And John, in John chapter 20, and beginning in verse 1, begins his narrative of the events that took place on that morning. And I say morning, and I use that somewhat loosely in the way that we would say morning, because the day started before the sun did. In fact, what we find is Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early while it was still dark. And she saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. I imagine she also noticed there weren't any guards there. That might have been a clue that something wasn't quite the way it was. Although, whether she would have even known that there were supposed to have been guards, we don't know. We don't know how much knowledge the disciples had of the inner workings of what was going on the other side of town with the Pharisees and Sadducees and their inner workings with the Roman government. We don't know exactly how much they knew, so maybe the lack of a guard wouldn't have even been surprising to her. She might not have been expecting any kind of guard. And one of the things that we want to mention here is this describes Mary Magdalene coming to the tomb before the sun has even arisen. The best we can figure from putting together all the gospel accounts is that Mary actually probably went to the tomb three times. This was the first time where she comes seemingly alone and sees that the stone was rolled away. She will also follow Peter and John back and have some discussions with Jesus himself in a few moments. But then also she'll come back to the tomb once again with the women who had prepared spices. And the women, if you remember, the women were going along on their way. They were going to anoint Jesus' body with spices, and they're saying, well, I wonder who's going to roll the stone away for us. And Mary Magdalene might have said, hey, when we get there, the stone's not going to be... And they may not have believed her. There was a lot of disbelief on this day. I want us to realize this is just the first of many of the disciples, but also there were others. Certainly the guards saw the stone was rolled away. They saw what had taken place, even though they may not have understood what had happened. They saw the physical evidence of a stone rolled away from a tomb. But they may not have understood. And when we think about it, it's quite likely that perhaps hundreds of people made their way to that tomb that day to see if the rumor that was being spread around that the tomb was empty was actually true. Who knows, in a city like Jerusalem, maybe thousands came. You know, we live in a bit of a rural area. And you know, sometimes when an event happens, people get kind of excited about it. And they all show up to look. Right after my wife and I were married, we lived in West Texas for that first summer before we went back to school. Lived out in the panhandle of Texas near Amarillo. And it was a little farming community. And the oddest thing happened. Out in the middle of one of those farmers' fields, the ground just caved in. It sunk in. And the story went that the worker came and told the boss, the owner of the land, hey, there's a sinkhole. Owner said, well, get a pickup truck, go get some dirt, go fill it in. He said, no, it's a big sinkhole. Grande sinkhole, boss. And so, sure enough, the boss went out there and looked, and that sinkhole in the middle of his field was large enough that we could have dropped this entire building into it. Assuming we could pick it up and carry it to Texas to do that with it, which would be tough, that in and of itself. But it was huge. Now, in that, people were driving from town out. It was about 5 miles out in the country. Everybody was driving from town, drive out there, park the car, get out, walk over and look around. Wow, look at that. Now, you might not think a hole in the ground is very exciting. But I guarantee you, if that hole in the ground was where Jesus had been buried, that'd be pretty exciting, wouldn't it? Wouldn't you want to go see that? If you knew, hey, he was buried there 3 days ago and now they're saying it's empty, wouldn't you want to go look? I would. A lot of folks would. So I wonder just how many people went and looked at that empty tomb. We don't have a record of all of them. We only have a few that are mentioned. But it is something that, you know, people are curious about things that are out of the ordinary. That old sinkhole out there is filled up with water and it's a lake now. I don't think you can do much fishing in it, but it filled in with water and became a lake. That's interesting that Mary Magdalene came and saw the stone had been taken away. Notice she didn't even look inside. She didn't go inside. And it was still dark. So she didn't see anything. But she made some assumptions. She ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and we know who that is, that's John. And she said to him, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they've laid him." So chances are, as she was going along to go back to Peter and John, she may have run up on some of the other disciples and other people and started, "Do you know what they did with Jesus' body? Do you know what's happened to Jesus? He's not mature. They rolled the stone away. Where did he, do you know where he is?" She may have been asking all along the way, because when she gets there, she says, "We don't know where they've laid him." Now notice a couple of things that are significant there. The "we" indicating that it wasn't just her, unless she'd been repossessed by those demons that he'd cast out of her. But no, it wasn't just her. She had talked to some other people, and they didn't know either. And then notice the second part of that. They have taken the Lord, and they have laid him somewhere. At this point, the thought of him being risen from the grave has not crossed her mind. Perhaps she assumes that the Jews have done it. Perhaps she assumes that the Romans have done it. But somebody, she thinks, has opened the tomb and taken the Lord's body out and laid it somewhere else. Now this is news to Peter and John. You see, if the soldier's story that his disciples came and stole the body while we were asleep, do you realize how foolish that sounds? We were asleep, but we know what happened while we were asleep. I don't know about you, I don't usually know what happened while I was asleep. How would they have known the disciples came and stole the body if they were asleep? But Peter and John's reaction to what she tells them here is not what you would expect if that story were true. If the disciples were the ones responsible for taking the body, they wouldn't have been surprised by her bursting in and saying, "The body's gone." They would say, yeah, we moved it to another tomb or whatever. But instead, Peter went out with the other disciple and they were going toward the tomb. Now why? Because they didn't know. First of all, they probably weren't sure whether she was hey Mary, are you sure you're at the right tomb? I mean, it's dark. Maybe you got in the, maybe you were in the wrong row, right? It wasn't that one. It was one that hadn't been used yet. Maybe you just got confused. It was dark after all, right? That can happen. You ever done that? While Don and I were on our trip, we went on a little tour of a chocolate factory because they gave out a free tour. It was a free tour and they gave you free samples. So you know I wouldn't go miss that. So we went on the tour of the chocolate factory. But when we came back out of the chocolate factory, there was somebody getting into our van. It took her a little while as she's looking at all the junk that was in it that didn't belong to her before she realized, This isn't my vehicle. You ever done that? I've done that. That's embarrassing. Fortunately, when I did it, nobody was watching, so it wasn't as bad. But we walked out, right? Well, she's like, "I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to steal anything. I thought that was my van. I got one that looks like it, and, well, wasn't that much like it, but it was a rental, so she wasn't quite sure exactly what it did look like. But it's easy to get confused. It's easy to go to the wrong one. You ever try to go to somebody's house and wind up at the wrong house? Done that a few times. Wind up in the wrong place. So maybe Mary was just confused. So they go out and they're going to go to the tomb. Now, more evidence that they do not know what's going on and they didn't have any part of it. Both of them were running. They wouldn't have been running toward the tomb if they knew what was going on. They were running together. The other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. Now, Kaufman says it shouldn't be surprising because John was no doubt younger than Peter, and so he could run faster. All the pictures I've ever seen of him, Peter was more fat like me, and You know, and John was more slender like Xander, you know, and that's probably why. We don't really know why, but for some reason John was fleeter of foot than Peter, and he got there first. But it's interesting, even though he reached the tomb first, verse 5 tells us, he stooped to look in and he saw the linen cloths. And that's significant. Lying there, but he did not go in. So he looked in, he saw linen cloth. Now the idea here is that, and we have, if you haven't ever looked into that, you might want to look into the Shroud of Turin, that is supposedly a sheet that has the imprint of Jesus on it as he rose from the grave, that the bright light of him rising from the grave imprinted his image on this sheet. It's interesting. But the idea here that John gives us is that it wasn't one big sheet that he would have been wrapped in, but rather more like the mummies, he would have been wrapped in several strips of cloth. And the idea being kind of like with Lazarus. When Lazarus comes out of the tomb, Jesus says, "Unbind him and set him free," as though he was wrapped up, not just laid in a sheet with it folded over him or something like that, but actually wrapped up. And we don't know entirely for sure, but the indication here is he saw the linen cloths actually being a plural word, that it wasn't just one sheet. It was several pieces of fabric that were used to wrap the body of Jesus when he was put into the tomb. But John sees that, but he doesn't go in. Then Peter came and followed him, and then he went into the tomb. Now, it's very possible that by this time, daybreak has come, and so they have some light to be able to see. Perhaps, if it was still dark, they brought a torch so they could see what they were doing. But he saw the linen cloth lying there. And verse 7 says, "And the face cloth, which had been on Jesus' head," not lying with the linen cloth, but this says folded up, some say rolled up, and in a place by itself. And so, you know, it's a very odd scene. You wouldn't expect to come into a grave and see the grave close, but not the grave's occupants. That's unusual. That's odd. So John and Peter have noticed some things are different. Some things are unusual. The other disciple then also went in. And he saw and he believed. Now, here's some more evidence that this was not a case of somebody moving Jesus' body. I hope none of you are grave robbers, but imagine for just a moment that you were. If you were a grave robber, and you were to go out here into our cemetery and dig up a grave and open that casket up, and you were going to steal the body. You know, they used to do that a lot for medical, the cadavers that they tested on in medical schools, they'd steal them out of graveyards. Mark Twain wrote a story about that with Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. But imagine, you've dug this grave up, you opened it up. Now, are you going to take the time to undress that fellow in the grave before you take the body and leave the clothes there? That's a little weird, isn't it? You're gonna unwind and unwrap and, you know, and take... No. A grave robber's in a hurry to get the job done and get out of there so he doesn't get caught. If somebody had stolen Jesus' body, they would have stolen the grave clothes too. They're going to take that with them. I'm going to leave it there. So this is more indication that Jesus, when he rose from the dead, rose up right through those cloths that had him, that he was wrapped, his body was wrapped in, and just rose up right through them and left them laying there. And John confesses himself that until he saw that, he didn't believe. Maybe he was thinking like Mary, somebody has taken the Lord's body. Now remember, it was dark when Mary went, so she didn't see what they've seen. So she didn't know this. But now they look in there and they see the clothes are there. And now they're starting to think, wait a minute. This is not the way it should be. Something's wrong. And no, Mary didn't have the wrong tomb. This is the right tomb. This is it. This is where they laid him. And then he says in verse 9, for as yet they did not understand the Scripture that he must rise from the dead. How many times did Jesus try to pound that into their heads? Got to go to Jerusalem, got to suffer and rise on the third day. Over and over again he talks about his coming death. And about that he was going to rise again. And all over and over again he had taught that. Destroy this temple and in 3 days I'll raise it up. On and on. And yet his own disciples did not understand those scriptures. And it wasn't until they actually saw the clothes laying there that they began to think, maybe he's not dead. Maybe something has happened here. Then the disciples went back to their homes. I don't know, what would you do? It seems like you're just going to go home after that, but what would you do? What could you do? It would have been the stunning end to a week that has been full of stunning events. One after the other. You know, they found out Judas is a traitor. They've had Jesus go on trial. He's been executed. They've been scared. You know, all these things have been happening in these last 3 days. Last 3 or 4 days. And leading up to that even with the all the things going on in Jerusalem. And all of this leading itself to them finding then an empty tomb. What do you do? What would you do? What could you do? Let's go home and think about this. I gotta figure out what's going on here. It's like nothing I've ever seen. This certainly isn't the end by any means. But it is the end for tonight. I'll leave you with a cliffhanger. What are they going to do after they go home? You know, none of us had the experience that they had of walking into that empty tomb, of seeing the stone rolled away. We haven't seen that. None of us had the opportunity to see Jesus after His resurrection as they did, and as we'll see they do several times in several different circumstances, different ones see Him after His resurrection. And we didn't have that opportunity. But because people like John, now remember, by the time John is writing his gospel, a lot of the earliest Christians have died. Peter's gone. James, of course, was the first to go. Stephen's gone. You know, several of them are gone. They're dead by now. And you have a second generation who, like us, didn't see it with their own eyes. Or you have people like John Mark, who were young. They were kids. Do you know how your memory changes when you grow up and you get and those things that happened when you were a kid and you go back and things don't seem the same as they did when you were a kid? It looks different. Well, they had that situation. And so John, who as far as we know was the latest living of the apostles, the last one still alive who was one of the apostles who actually was there, tells his first person account. Here's what happened, here's what we did, and this was the point when I started to believe. And I saw it. And that's one of the things that John tells us over and over again. I saw this. Not just in his gospel, but in his letters as well. The things we've seen and heard and our hands have touched, then that we've handled the word of life. He said, I know this is true because I was there. And because of his testimony and the testimony of the others, we can have faith. And when we compound that with the reasonableness and the logic and the evidence, if Jesus' body was still out there somewhere, why didn't it turn up? Why didn't the Roman soldiers find it? Why didn't the Jewish leaders find it? If they could have produced the body and said, oh, he's not risen, here he is right here, it would have squashed Christianity like a bug on the pavement. Right there, the end of it. Because your Messiah, your Savior, your founder of your religion is dead. And unlike other religions that go on with dead founders, Christianity cannot. Paul made it very clear. If Jesus did not rise from the grave, then our faith is in vain. Even if he was born of a virgin, even if he did live a perfect sinless life, even if he did fulfill all those prophecies and die just as was predicted and was buried, if that was the end of the story, as unfortunately it is in Jefferson's Bible, if that was it, if that was the end, they laid him in the tomb, the end, then there would be no point in believing. But that's not the end. Here we have the follow-up. As Paul Harvey would say, here's the rest of the story. Most folks, when they die, there's not a rest of the story. They're dead. But with Jesus, there's the rest of the story. He rose again. The tomb was found empty. And he was seen alive. If you have a need to respond to God's invitation this evening, perhaps it is that you have not really had the faith that you should have. Oh, maybe you go to church and read the Bible. Do you really believe? Do we really believe that Jesus is the Son of God? Do we really believe that He rose from the grave? Do we really believe that through His power, we too will be able to rise from the dead on that final resurrection day? If you have a need to respond to God's invitation at this time for any reason, please do so as we stand and as we sing.